Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Joining me on today's show, we've got Brandon Pollock. He is the Director of Global Civic Engagement and Strategy at Bird. If you don't know what Bird is, well, you haven't traveled much. It's the one of the upstart scooter companies that are making life a lot easier if you're trying to buzz around the city easier and faster. I guess for me, some people think it's a nuisance. I totally disagree. I actually think it's awesome. I think it's super fun. I get giddy watching other people ride around on it. And I'm not going to BS you. I'm just too lazy to get on a bike and pedal. I'm not doing it. Like, and also, you know, sweat, filth. I'm just, no. Bird is the word. Brandon and I had a pretty solid conversation. Obviously, it was a pretty long show, a little longer than normal. But we go into everything from like the cost and build of these things to dealing with the politics, to bringing them to Chicago, which is coming up soon. You'll hear it first from us when they get with the go ahead. In fact, Brandon even told me I might be able to take the first ride, which would be sweet. But yeah, it's a great new company. I think it really we get into a little bit of like the last mile, which you hear a lot about in the IoT space, but I actually think autonomous vehicles is an interesting sort of place. And the autonomous scooter, I think that hits the streets near you faster than Elon Musk's car. That's just my guess, my prediction. Safer and all that jazz. So in all, I think it was a really good conversation. You're going to learn a lot about Bird and scooters in general if you're unfamiliar, if you haven't been around. Because, I mean, you go to anything in the West Coast and they're all over the place. But also, like, even Indy. And there's use cases that go way beyond what I think you're probably imagining. So I have a nice conversation coming up with Brandon. Before I do that, I got to check in with the Startup Inbox. Startup Inbox is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. We use ActiveCampaign. I love it. If you subscribe to the newsletter, which if you don't, you should. You will notice on the bottom, if you get to the bottom, it's brought to you by ActiveCampaign. All you need to do is click on that link or activecampaign.com/technori. Get your first 2 months free. The question that I am asked on here is, what's the future with incubators, by Timothy Barnett? Great question. Pretty vague. I feel like, I don't know. What is the future? Ironically, I should have asked Brandon this question when we're on the show, because he ran one, 1776. He ran, and he's a co-founder of, and so very familiar in 1871. So here's my thing. I think incubators will always have a place. What the place does is going to vary. 1871 under Howard, I feel like, was more of a startup hub and less of an education, and has nothing to do with Betsy or what's going on at 1871. It's more of just the evolution of this city, this tech ecosystem, and us as people and entrepreneurs. I think that a lot of the incubators, at least for the next little while, if they're smart, are going to replace a lot of education institutions. I think for me personally, I get a lot out of my Northwestern masters and all that, and I learned a lot and the network and all that jazz. But I got to tell you, I'm paying on that loan now. And boy, if I could have just gone to 1871, met everybody, asked a few questions, signed up for General Assembly, and got my stuff going, I kind of think that I would not have spent, I don't know, maybe a tenth as much and probably accomplished what I was trying to accomplish in the meantime anyway. I think there's an opportunity to disrupt education. And I think that a lot of the incubators, if they're smart, they're trying to figure that out. I think one thing that they should have learned, if they haven't already, is that this sort of like, you're either co-working, in which case leave it alone and focus on creating a great experience for people who go there and attract tenants, because that's what they are, or go the route of great content and education and a platform to learn. Do not go the route of, we are going to supplement your tech needs and your marketing needs. And it's just, if you haven't tried it, I'll just be the one to tell you, it's very disappointing. There are so many variables. Every company's different. Founders are different. Leadership's different. Markets are different. Pace is different. Scale is different. Everything is different. What one company needs as far as capital is nothing. We talked to Bird. They're worth like $1 billion, more than that. Now they've raised hundreds of millions of dollars. They have a lot of needs that take extreme precision. And then there's other companies that are worth $1 billion that take $250,000 and they're profitable after that and it's off to the races. And you don't know who you are until like 2 years, 3 years into it. I was just talking to a very successful entrepreneur the other day, talked about how he didn't, you know, even know that they're a real sustainable good business for 8 years. Doesn't mean that they weren't making money and value. It's a $1 billion plus company now. It was a $1 billion company 4 years ago, but it was like 8 years until there was a sustainable, every single lane is spoken for. I know what I and we are doing every single day. It takes a long time. And who you were when you started versus who you are at that point are very, very different. And so I think what I can tell you is incubators should not, they probably will foolishly chase fool's gold, should not get in the support role. Very bad spot. Very, very bad. Very bad spot. You don't want to be in that spot. What you want to be in the role of is solving problems for people and making it easier for them to get in the business. And in that case, it is education. How do I fill out my docs? How do I get this going? How do I learn how to do basic coding? Help me do me. Do not get into the world of doing for me. Help me do me, or just give me a space to work. That's it. That's where I think it's going. So, with that said, I think it's time for us to head on over to Brandon or conversation with Bird. But before that, I had to. I couldn't resist. I sat here this entire time. A little shout out to Dave Chappelle. Here you go. Hi, Bird. This is my conversation with Brandon Pollock from Bird. I see you guys obviously are setting up for a Chicago pilot. I was first introduced to, whether it was Bird or if it was just the idea of the scooters in general, when I took a trip with my wife to San Diego, and I was like, I'm walking down the street and my wife is like, is that me? Or is it like, we are like at a playground? Like, what the hell is going on? And like, I see like these like scooters everywhere. And I was like, this is like Back to the Future. Like, do people, are people scooting around? Like, what the hell is going on? And then finally we came into like the inner downtown San Diego and was like, okay, so there's something up here because this is everywhere. And then we started Googling and searching and realizing by the end of the trip, we literally were birding around all over the city. In fact, we took it to we took the scooters to the zoo and back to the hotel. So it was like literally a transformational thing. So you guys are coming to Chicago, so the expectation is that it's going to be like that here too.
Well, I think your experience was the same experience that a lot of people have that live in cities where they don't have access to scooters just yet, right? I've talked to so many people that are from Chicago or New York or Boston or so many other markets who've gone to either Santa Monica or San Diego or been somewhere where they had this amazing experience that was like totally transformational. I mean, you even hear reporters in Indianapolis talking about how it brings them back to their childhood. There's this incredible emotional connection and this excitement. First time anyone rides a bird that they have, and there's this ultimate excitement of like, how do we get this in our city? What's this going to be like? How could this totally transform how we get from point A to point B? So Chicago is certainly a city that's very exciting for us. I mean, for me personally, I spent a lot of Chicago over the years being from the Detroit area. And so I've been going to Chicago for a long time, and I've experienced every mishap in transportation I think there could be, from, you know, L train breakdowns to sitting in unbelievably crazy traffic coming from O'Hare, or just being in the city over the years that, you know, having access to scooters, you know, people that live in Chicago as they move around across neighborhoods or potentially the downtown area, could be incredibly powerful in transforming how people get around in the city.
Yeah. So, I mean, to that point, like the two things that I think were, I don't know, interesting, I guess. The first one, and you mentioned this, the childhoodness sort of like about the experience. I'm sure for you, and if you're from Detroit area and you've definitely been around the Midwest, and you're probably very familiar with like four wheelers and dirt bikes, when you're a kid, the very first time, or even when you're an adult for that matter, and you show up at like your uncle's house and there's a four-wheeler or, you know, some kind of motorbike that's sitting there, and you're like, oh yeah, you know, it's gonna be fun. You hop on it and you're like, start, you know, whipping around the yard in it. That was the sort of excitement that I thought when I got on the scooter, because it's like, this thing is motorized. It's fun. It's quick. It's not dangerous quick. It's just quick enough to get some wind in your hair. And it's like, what a cool, you know, like we're like drag racing up and down, you know, the little area side street that we were on, just like trying to figure out like, wow, does this, can I do this? Like, how does this work?
It's probably a little hard to drag race on scooters, but you know, I'm, you know, 15 miles an hour, you know, like you said, you're not exactly going slow, but you're not going fast.
It's just no, it's like a golf cart. It's like a golf cart. It's like, it's a safe speed, but you feel like you're going.
You know, what's funny is like right after I joined Bird, I was in Arizona with some family, and we were playing golf, and they had some of the bigger scooters on the course. That I mean, anytime you can get on any of those kinds of vehicles, you're going to have an incredibly fun experience. That's also going to change the way you think about how I can use this. And you know, it's funny you think about, because if you know they if you think about any good entrepreneur, right? There's a kind of a connection point that they think about when they start a company. And like our CEO and founder has talked about publicly how, you know, when he was starting the company, given his experience in transportation and everything, you know, it was like, I'm thinking about, you know, e-bikes, I'm thinking about scooters, because, I mean, transportation's in his blood. I mean, his mom was a bus driver in Wisconsin, and he rode the bus for years with her and really saw every problem that there was. And he talks about how it was Christmas, and he gave his daughters bikes for Christmas, just regular bikes. And they were all excited, they were riding the bikes, and it was fun. The next day, they went right back to their scooters. So he's like, scooters, I think, is where it's at.
No, I totally get it. And so like, it's funny, again, you're right on, you're like pulling off my notes here. So the other thing I think is really interesting is about the bike, the conversation about the bike. And you may have a different opinion here. I don't see it as a rival in any way, shape or form. And I know this is kind of a dumb segue for listeners to be like, are they really debating scooter versus bike? And does it matter? Like from a business standpoint, it does, but also from a user standpoint, when I think of a bike, I'm thinking of like, it's on purpose. It's not for me at least, it's not the last mile. For me, a bike is something that I might take and like when I'm in San Francisco and I go across the bridge and like it's a thing and I'm dressed for it. The idea of me, because we have Divvy bikes here in Chicago, the idea of me with my work bag or a briefcase, which is even worse, or a suit or anything to get on a bike and pedal is going to make me sweaty and then I got to change clothes and this isn't going to work. And that was the thing ultimately that I thought was really unique about Bird was scooters in general, but Bird in particular, that I could find it. I knew where it was going. I knew exactly how far my destination was planned to go. There's birds everywhere for me to jump on. I can leave it exactly by the door where I'm going, and I'm not going to exert a lot of energy. And it's very easy if you've got like a bag or a backpack or whatever it is you carry. It's very easy because you're not really swaying and swinging and doing things. And so you don't have to worry about stuff like being attached to the bike. You don't have to worry about mud and stuff flying up behind you because the way that the tires and everything are much smaller, obviously. And there's no need for like, you've got like a little mud flap, but there's no need for like actual mud flap. And it's a different experience altogether that it just, in my opinion, I was kind of doubtful at first. I was like, well, I don't know how this would go. After trying it, it was like really abundantly clear to me that like the bike serves one purpose for a certain type of person and the Bird serves an entirely different purpose for, you know, everybody.
Yeah. So on that point, I think, you make some very good points. Right. And, you know, we kind of look at it as we coexist with bikes, right. Yep. We are very much believers in riding in bike lanes. And there should be, you know, that's one of the things that scooters have really drawn to the attention to, which is like the need to have more, not just bike lanes, but protected bike lanes.
Yes.
And so the sweet spot on scooters, I think, which is why it's so unique and so people are so drawn to them, is this 2 miles and less gap, right? It's this particular point where you don't want to spend the money to jump into a car, into a rideshare or a taxi, and go such a short distance. You know, that's like, you're just going to potentially sit in traffic. You know, you might be going somewhere that's a little bit too long to walk. So there's been some gaps and micromobility, and one that scooters have identified as one that people want. As we see with the demand of scooters, is that it's not a fad, right? Like the early days when scooters are coming out, oh, is this just another fad? Is this something that's going to pass? Like, is it cool? Is it a toy? I mean, I think we've gotten everything that there is.
Is it
but
a toy?
When it came down to it, people were very excited because you had an affordable mode of transportation. You had the fun part. I mean, some people talk about, yeah, they don't want to sweat. I'm a workout fanatic. I work out six days a week. So, like, I love my exercise. But at the same time,
not in my suit, though. I just got back from the gym. I love it, but I don't.
Hopefully you get a late start to the day.
Yeah, like you're already like I feel like for me again. Like I don't mean to like sorry to cut you off. I don't mean to pigeonhole this to use a bird reference that was supposed to be funny, but no one laughed.
If there's anything that we've done well, it's like there are so many planned words.
Well, yeah, you've got that coming, but like here's the thing, I don't. So, like, for me, and this is, like, super first world problems, right? Like, time versus money versus hassle. For me, generally speaking, when I'm using a mode of transportation that's not walking, to your point, it's not, like, obviously if it's too far to walk, that's one thing. Totally different, the 2 mile kind of rule. When we're a mile or less, and even more specifically, like, a half a mile to a mile away from my meeting, I run all the way to the last second. I usually am running behind. My heart is racing and I've got to get rolling. And I'm like, I'm going to hop in an Uber, even though I should have walked this, but I'm not going to. I'm not going to jump on a bike because I don't want to be pedaling while my heart's already racing because I'm late. So now I'm sweating. But also, bike stations, for obvious reasons, are not the same as scooter. Bike stations need to be centralized, whereas a scooter can be on corners. So the bike really isn't even an option for me in that scenario, whereas a scooter absolutely is an option because they're all right next to the bridge. So I just jump on, go. And I think that is a big differentiator, that it's anti-sweat, it saves time, it's the last half mile, and it's convenient to just go and drop off. I don't have to worry about, you know, kickstanding and like re-swiping and getting the thing plugged into its divvy, you know, stop point, whatever. I think
one of the things that you highlight, and there's a whole lot of reasons, and you know, and that includes, like, you know, people that live in underserved communities, sure, and that, them having access to it and tackling the equity and the transportation deserts. But to some of the point that you've made, which is why so NACTO just came out with a study last week where they showed that, you know, there were 38.5 million trips taken on shared scooters this past year, now surpassed bike share, right? Station-based
that
bike
quickly.
Share.
How long has scooter sharing been a thing?
38.5 million on shared scooters. It's 36.5 million on station-based bike share. And part of that also stems from something that you talked about, is people sometimes will have to walk. You know, we have bike share in DC, and there's bike share all over the place. Is that it's, you know, one, it's like you have to walk maybe 4 or 5 blocks out of your way to get to one versus just being able to go from point A to point B. You're able to, depending on how the city regulations are concerned, you could potentially have thousands of scooters that then can be deployed across the city versus bike share, which might be in only certain designated spots. So it's not necessarily serving people that live in, you know, the underserved communities, but also people, as you were describing, like aren't working in bustling downtown areas. It's an easier way to get around. So there's a reason why we're seeing that trend continue to spike up exponentially because of some of the issues like you just highlighted.
I honestly think this is going to be like the most American thing ever. I think that one of the reasons that scooters are, I can't believe this quickly that they have surpassed the bike, but one of the things that I think might be the contributing factor is we're too lazy to swing a leg over a seat when I can just stand on a paddle. Like, it's just that, it's like, in the end, it's really that simple. I can just step up on this thing rather than have to actually, like, adjust a seat and get it on my butt and then, like, sit on it and ride it, and it's just different. And I think you guys, you know, have figured out how to make the path of absolute least resistance. And to your point, not that bikes, I don't have stats here, so I'm just speculating, but I'm going to go ahead and guess, you know, bikes aren't cheap. Learning how to ride a bike, especially in disadvantaged areas, I think actually could be a deterrent that people don't know how to ride a bike. A scooter is pretty simple. Like it doesn't take much to learn. And I think that actually could be a thing.
And I think you know, one of the things that you kind of touched on there is that, you know, this is a mode of transportation that, you know, usually takes people to not very long to master. But also, you know, it's funny, you look at like men and women, you know, women that are wearing heels, yep, and, you know, working, like that ability, which is why we have such a high number of women that ride scooters. And some of the points that they highlight are some of those, because based on, you know, I can wear one type of clothing, and whether it's work attire or whatever it be, I can't wear that if I'm riding a bike versus I can do that if I'm riding a scooter. And so, you know, there are some, you know, simple things like that. You know, one of the other things, I think it was really fascinating. So there was a story, and this kind of goes away from it a little bit. So there's a story. So I remember I was on a panel, Washington Post panel, and, you know, Jonathan Capehart was leading it. We had a lot of fun. And afterwards I posted on LinkedIn just about, you know, the panel. It was great. You know, it was us. It was Uber and some others. And, a woman reached out to me and said, she commented on my post and said, you know, my daughter lives in Indianapolis and she has MS. She's 23 or 24. She's in medical school. She's a medical student. And she says to me, it has totally transformed her access to scooters in Indianapolis has totally been able to transform, how she gets around. She lives 5 or 6 blocks from, some of the bars and some of the restaurants. And, you know, I reached out and I connected with her, and she said, you know, a lot of times when I've had to, I wanted to meet up with my friends, and, you know, by looking at me, you would never know that I had MS. And she goes out and she has that ability to, stay up with her friends and be able to go out because of that access. She would say, you know, when, especially in the summer, when it get really hot, her symptoms come out.
Yep.
And it's very difficult for her to walk even a couple of blocks, sometimes a block or two. And she said, this has been totally transformative for me to be able to get around. So there's whole different ways that I don't think people thought about necessarily. You know, when they thought about scooters initially, they're like, oh, this is just going to be for tech bros, versus there are people, whether they're in disadvantaged areas or they have certain medical conditions, where this is empowering them. And she said to me, she's like, you know, it makes me feel like everybody else. And I think that was something that really resonated and kind of showcased why this is also important, because we're able to help people like that.
It's a great story. And I actually have heard similar things from other people that are like this, that are, have certain disabilities. There's a veteran that is on my train. He comes from, I take the Glen Ellen to downtown. He takes the Lombard to downtown, and he's missing part of his leg. And so he literally basically like has like a crutch and like a bike, for obvious reasons, doesn't really work well for him. And he uses this when he travels. He loves it. He was like, oh yeah, I've been in San Francisco and all these other places, and it's a huge help. So that does not surprise me at all that there's a ton of stories that are very similar to that. You know, I think what I'd like to do is dig in a little bit more into some of these things. So I think there's a couple of things that are kind of interesting about not just Bird, but the scooter effect in general. I think, you know, your experience is very diverse. You've worked in venture fund, you've worked in your own incubator, you've been, you know, in marketing, you've been all over the place. So you get this. I feel like brands, whether it's a brand or activity experience, you know, we'll call it what you want, that make people have fun while they're doing it and create a sense of joy when you see other people doing it, is something that is really, you can't put a price on it. And I think one of the things that I don't think it'll ever change, when I see people zooming around on scooters, I really do actually think like they look like they're having fun, and I kind of smirk or giggle. It makes me feel better. And you know that they're having a good time too. And it's just one of those sort of like childlike activities, which I think is good for society in general, that we like have more fun and stop like being, you know, social media trolls that we are. And so I think that this is one of the cool, like just a cool thing that I think potentially could be transformative. On the other hand, and this is where the questions come in, you know, some of the concerns that people raise about this is obviously, you know, managing where they're dropped off and making sure that there's not like a ton of scooters just flinging and flying around, especially as there's competition in the city for this and that sort of thing. Where do you guys fall on that? Like, how do you guys manage that? And I know that it will be a work in progress forever because obviously you can't predict how many people are going to be using it yet.
Right. No, I mean, I think this is the thing that, you know, we've always took the tact of safety, for example, as our top priority, and how people actually adhere to the education and the way they ride it. So we are very specific on, you know, not just saying safety is our top priority, but kind of taking the lead in how we've done that, right? So not just wearing helmets, right? You know, it's funny because, you know, as Travis likes to say, you know, we're also encouraging people to wear helmets because cars are dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. That's probably the best reason to wear a helmet.
That's a lot of the big concerns is not, you know, the scooters themselves, it's the cars. And so I think one of the things that we have, as a company, we've done a great job of from the time that we launched to now is like every startup has to evolve, right? Business model is never perfect on day one, right? And we've evolved as a company as well from the first days where, you know, Travis and the team that we had, they just put some scooters out in front of a WeWork and said, let's see what happens. And it's changed over time. And you also can't run the playbook of, you know, like some of the rideshare companies had done in the past where we just give basically a middle finger to the city and say, you know, we're just going to go operate.
Yep.
Right. Like that doesn't work anymore either. And I spent a lot of years telling startups.
That was a different Travis.
Exactly. And besides,
Travis 2.0.
They're onto that now. They don't, you know, like they don't, they're in tune to what's going on. Back, you know, 7 years ago, they had no idea what was going on. But, you know, what we've really tried to focus on again is, you know, taking the lead and how we protect people. That means protecting them both physically, but also, you know, their privacy. That includes making sure that they, you know, they've put in their driver's license, that they were over 18. So we've established a global safety board. We've gone above and beyond to work with cities directly. We've taken this philosophy as cities as our customers. And we really want to work with them to really adapt the best rules of the road and couple that in with education, whether it's an app or to a lot of the stuff that I'm working on, which is really around our global strategy around stakeholder engagement. Going into the community, and this will also get to your point about brands, going into the community and meeting and spending a lot of time connecting with everyone from the business and tech communities to the foundations, the nonprofits, the churches, really going through, you know, the disability advocates, safety advocates, really spending a lot of time and engaging with all those people and educating on our vision of what Bird and where we see scooters benefiting them and the city is a huge part of what we do. Because we also want people, to your point about brands, we want people to feel as if Bird is a local company, even if we're not, right? We're based in California. We're in 120 plus markets. But ultimately, we want people, and that's government officials as well, to be able to say, Bird has gone above and beyond to make scooters work in our city. And we want to work with them. We want to partner with them. And to the average person riding on the street, what is going to make you, ride a Bird versus potentially another company? And a lot of that goes into that. That engagement, that partnership leads to a lot of brand affinity, a lot of goodwill, and ultimately build strong relationships. And that is very important for if you're going to operate in a city, especially if a city, DC, for example, you can have 10 operators or 11 operators, however many are here. What's going to make somebody want to take your product versus another product? And some of that has to do with how you engage in the community. It's very important. And that leads to also that kind of education where people are riding responsibly. They're adhering to the rules of the road. You know, we do a lot of education on parking. And so making sure they're parking in appropriate places and not just leaving them all over the place on the sidewalk, like, that's not good. We want that off the sidewalk.
Let me ask you a dumb question. How do you, you mentioned the fact that you have to create a differentiator. Why I choose Bird. I can assure you now, having talked to you, I will choose Bird. But how do you get people to select Bird over competition? Because the scooter, you know, it's hard to brand and it's hard to create an experience other than, you know, the app is easy and fun and quick. You're going to have to add, you know, kind of augmented experiences in order for you to differentiate, assuming that all things are equal, meaning that, you know, the bikes themselves are maintained properly and they're available and all that, you know, good stuff, that the stuff you have to get right. Minus that, it's got to be hard to differentiate, like, why, if I see three scooters on the corner, I got to get my customers to look and see the green or to see the Bird, you know, like, I got to get them to see it. What do you guys, how do you plan on doing that? Or how do you do it?
Well, I think as you'll see over time, and people are already seeing this I think a big part is going to be evolution of the vehicles themselves, that they're becoming more durable, they're safer, they're more environmentally friendly. Just take on sustainability, right? Like, we're talking about, you know, we're really focused on Earth Month. And Bird has been partnering with One Tree Planet. You know, we're pledging to plant one tree for every Bird rider who takes six rides in the month of April, right? Like, that's an example of, you know, brands overall are really kind of focused on, you know, social impact, right? It's hard to see a successful brand now that isn't engaged in social impact in some degree or another. And ours, you know, sustainability is a huge piece of our mission and our plan. Right. So one is talking about how we're leading in areas like safety, obviously, and sustainability and building strong relationships within the community. But also it's going to just come down to, are our vehicles better? And that's where I think you're starting to see the growth in our company, is this kind of transformation in the vehicles where, as they continue to change and evolve. That will also set the table. Eventually, not every vehicle will be, you know, similar. Our vehicles have evolved, and I'm sure some of our competitors have as well. But I think that's gonna be, you know, part of it as well.
You guys got to drop some hidden or secret scooters that just are just dispersed randomly, and you hop on it and you know it, because all of a sudden it starts like lighting up and you win something. I would like to win something. That's what I'm telling you to do. And then tell me which one it is. To the point though, like, so this is an example, and this is like right in line with what you're saying. And again, it's a dumb question. I say it's a dumb question because it's kind of obvious, but it's not. And if you're in the audience, you're like, you know, everyone, brands exist the same everywhere, but this is a little different to me. And so the comparative I had was Lyft and Uber. So like Uber, and there's obviously many more, but to me it's, you know, for it, in my phone, it's gone down to just two brands. And I had the fortunate opportunity to have a nice exchange with Logan from Lyft. And I loved him, and I love the idea, and I love the playfulness of the brand. I love the little mustache. And that was great. And then I was in Ubers, and I was like, I don't know why, but for whatever reason, maybe I'm antisocial, the Uber seemed more like business to me. It was like, let's just get in the car, let's get you where we're going. And it just worked. And for whatever reason, you know, I guess as I got older, Lyft was my Saturday ride. That's like my downtown Chicago Saturday weekend. We're having a good time. We're singing along. And then I'm like in work mode, and I'm in like decompress mode, and I go Uber on the way home. And I feel like it's that subconscious, a thing that you guys can create an experience where you've got scooters that make some music, or that people can stream their stuff in, or they, you know, any number of random things. And it'll be, I'm just really excited to see how you push the scooter experience forward, because we've only really known, you know, kick, start, and electric. We don't know anything else about the capability of that vehicle. And it'd be really interesting to see what you guys can do to sort of make me think of scooters even different than I do today.
Yeah. It's funny because just over a year ago, we weren't even talking about scooters.
Yeah.
Right.
This conversation's crazy that we've gotten to this point already.
And so it should, while, you know, a lot of conversation's been dominated by autonomous vehicles and drones and a number of other modes that, you know, we all hope come to fruition and everything. You have, on one end, you have one technology such as what we have versus autonomous vehicles, which are still kind of slowly being tested continuously, right? So that and frankly, I mean, just again, from like some of the ridership, I mean, even our first year, we did over 10 million rides, right? And then we had the, you know, the NACTO numbers that I talked about earlier. It just kind of shows you the growth potential. And we don't know what the vehicles are going to look like in probably 3 years, let alone, or what the business looks like in a couple of years, right? Because it's still evolving. We're still scaling. And that's the thing is, like, a lot of people that, you know, listen to your podcast who are startup founders, they know that the business may look completely different 2 years later than when they started. I mean, our business doesn't look the same. It's very rare to see businesses. I mean, you point to, you know, companies like Uber and Lyft. Uber has been evolving its business to be, you know, Uber Eats and, you know, freight and all sorts of other things, just like most companies do. So it's exciting. I mean, we're totally excited to see where can this go? What kind of impact can scooters ultimately have beyond the short point A to point B, whether it's helping people with disabilities or obviously lifting up people in economically depressed areas that have better access to jobs because they have access to a new mode of transportation to get to that, you know, that that bus or that elf stop or wherever it might be, right? So I think there's a huge opportunity, and it's exciting to see where the future is going. I mean, will there be flying scooters? I don't know, but you know, we'll see where it goes.
I swear to God, Brandon, it's like you're looking over my shoulder as I'm making these notes. You've guided this conversation exactly where I want to go, which is just awesome. Like the next thing I had written down was autonomous cars and the final mile. And the thing that you brought up that just sort of, I guess it ties it together, but it also is interesting because I didn't think about it. When we get to autonomous cars, it's very easy to think of, you know, what they are. They pick you up, drop you off, you know, don't need to drive it. You don't think of that with bikes and scooters and other alternative means because it's just not what it is. But what if it was? What if you downloaded the app for Bird and you put in, I'm going to the Apple store on Michigan Avenue, and the Bird just whoop, zipped to the door and you just get on it and you get off of it. And that is not only incredibly much more safe in a city environment than autonomous cars, at least at this point. I think you guys will be able to get that rolling faster than even the most ambitious Elon Musk. I think you have the ability, because of the safety, to really sort of create the narrative around autonomy and giving people rides and to and from. And to that point, I want to end this conversation with digging a little bit into this last mile, because I really, this is just, you know, my opinion, obviously, but Chicago seems to be the mecca for parking apps. You know, my guy Mark Lawrence at Spot Hero, ParkX, ParkWiz, we've got it all. And I think that speaking of autonomous cars and Elon Musk, I think that before we get too far ahead of ourselves, you've got to realize from an experience standpoint, if I hop into an autonomous car, self-driving car, my assumption is that I don't have to do any more thinking and that you're going to find me a parking spot for my car. So, like, I'm assuming now that this is my car, not an Uber, that you're going to need to, like, park me. And I almost think that while that will eventually evolve and refine itself and we'll get there, we're potentially spending a ton of money trying to solve a problem that's not really that big of a deal. Whereas you could just say, like, centralized parking, park the car, I get out of the car parks itself somewhere, and I can hop on a Bird and go the final distance. And that's not incremental. That's massively more inexpensive, massively easier to build, and more accessible for the average Joe. Do you follow what I'm saying, or am I just out of my mind?
Yeah, I mean, look, parking is one of the biggest headaches that cities have. It's certainly a big headache that universities have, right? And then you couple those together, universities and cities, and it's a whole other problem. I think that's one of the key things, right? Like you can basically, and we've seen this in other cities like San Diego, who you mentioned earlier, right? Like or in Santa Monica. There's a number of cities that are taking away parking for cars and turning those parking spaces into spaces for, you know, scooters, bikes, other, you know, micromobility solutions, right? That is something that I think is going to be key in the future, is how can we get some of these cars off the road that don't need to necessarily be on the road. It's one thing if you're driving from the suburbs down on the Ryan Expressway into downtown and everything, right? Like, you need a car to go, you know, 10, potentially 10, 12, 15, 20 miles, right? Versus when you get into the city, so think about it this way too. People are taking trains from the suburbs into downtown. What if they, instead of those, you know, or they're taking, you know, cars in, like I had mentioned before, and they're trying to find ways to park. And, but what if we could eliminate that, where they just take the train, they get off, and they're able to get on a scooter, go a mile, they're at their job. At no point do they have to get in their car [S2] Yep. [S1] At all, right? And you can transform those parking spaces into spaces that can be utilized for scooters and bikes. And I think that's one of the things that where cities are, we're working with cities to try to pilot. And I think that's one area in Chicago. I mean, there's, you know, we're very excited that, you know, Chicago is made, you know, the focus of the, with this pilot, that they are, you know, that they're pushing forward. You know, they're working to make it happen. And we're very excited about that. And we're offering all of our support in that endeavor. And I think Chicago really can be a model to think about, how do we transform parking? It can be a model based on what solutions around transportation deserts. It also can be a huge impact, too, for the existing businesses. I mean, obviously, you know, while Rahm is the outgoing mayor, you know, he has been a huge champion for the tech community.
Undoubtedly,
the tech
yeah.
community. And, you know, I used to do a lot of work with 1871 back when I was at 1776 and engaged with a lot of companies in Chicago. And we've seen a huge, huge growth. And, you know, one of the things that we want to see is be an added value to people that in these companies that are trying to attract talent, right? Transportation is a big component to attracting talent in a city, right? If a company decides that they want to expand in that market, whether let's say they are a transportation company, but one of the criteria they look at, and it's not just big tech companies that look at criteria, but smaller companies as well. There's a lot of components to that, how they attract talent. And having the right transportation system in place and having an added value is going to be huge for those companies that want to set up shop outside the downtown areas into some of the other neighborhoods, or as they expand out to other parts of the city. And they have to think about, like, I can have cheaper rent here. I'm still in the city. I have great access to what I need, great access to capital. How am I going to open that up? How are my employees going to get to our office? And that's something that I've heard before. And that has the ability to say that person gets off the L and then they got to go, you know, six blocks, eight blocks, whatever that might be. You know, having access to a scooter can be a huge, affordable mode of transportation that allows them to open up in other parts of the city that might have been either economically distressed before or just starting to become a growing hub. They can operate in other areas that might be less expensive to them, and so that way they can focus on pouring more money that they either raise or friends and family money, whatever they have, at what point they're at, and putting more money towards the business versus, you know, office space and other logistical expenses. You know, transportation is one of the biggest expenses that people have. And so the more that you can have a reliable mode that is highly affordable for people of all demographics, then I think you're going to see great success. And that's why I think, you know, Chicago, just based on its, you know, its vastness, one of our largest cities, can really develop a system that is highly transformational for people that live both in underserved communities, but also, you know, in the bustling downtown areas or around Merchandise Mart, wherever it might be, where you're seeing a lot of growth. So I think there's a lot of great opportunities there. That's why we're personally excited about Chicago. And, you know, there's a lot of new innovations, I think, that you know, the city can embark on.
I completely agree with you. I think, especially if you're going to talk about specifically the tech sector, the idea of having Bird essentially get us back and forth between, say, Merchandise Mart and, you know, where Lightbank and Grubhub and all those are at, and where Uber Tower's going and Salesforce. Like, I see it playing a gigantic role, at least during the not, you know, unpleasant months of the year. I think, like, just economically, and like I said to you before the question, this will work itself out over time. But I think economically, and the looking at this like a knot in a shoelace, the idea of from the suburbs to the city and from, you know, the original point to the final end point looks like a straight line, a parallel two shoelaces. But in the end, it's a big knot when you start getting to like where I park and where I get dropped off and where the car then goes and picks me up. And you would think it's seemingly that you just drop me off, the car parks itself and picks me up. But it's not that simple, because you got to calculate how much time and there's traffic and where the car park in relation to where there was a spot available and yada, yada, yada. It is an expensive and time consuming process to try to solve that problem when you literally could just drop Bird or whatever right down in front of it and say like, okay, we got you to this point. It's sort of like when you drive into most cities and you're going to a ball game, the parking lot is way away from the stadium, and then there's just a bus. And like, it could be a Bird. But like, still, the idea is let's avoid congestion wherever possible. And I think that's really expensive to undo the knot. So rather than we do that, why don't we just do something like a Bird that is just easy? And it's like, it's not expensive for people, and I really think the economic development opportunities that this brings could be really fascinating. The last question I have for you, and I'll let you go. Yeah, go ahead.
If I can, real quick.
Yeah.
You know, to your point, like on economic development, economic impact. I mean, there's another way to think about it too, is our chargers and how you have and the ability of people to earn income by charging our vehicles. Right.
Yep.
For every 10,000 Birds in a city, Bird helps create 3,000 employment opportunities and $25 million annual take-home pay for chargers, right? There's a legitimate opportunity for people within the city, you know, so like...
I don't think people know that, by the way. I don't think most people know that that's a thing.
There are incredible impacts, not just to the city and to the local businesses, but also to the people that are responsible for charging the vehicle. So, you know, so we've seen all that kind of play out, that between job creation and, you know, access to transit, it does spark a natural rise in the local economy and, you know, positively impacts local businesses.
No, it's a very good point. Like I said, I don't think people realize that that's also, there's like a gig economy component to this, which I think is incredibly helpful. The other two questions that I was going to ask you before, and then we got off on our own tangent was, you know, the cost of the bikes. You were talking about sustainability, the cost of the bikes and shrinkage. Like how, I'm just curious, how often do you have to replace them, and what is a unit, like what does a bike cost, or a bike, Jesus, what does a scooter cost?
Yeah, are you... Come on, we're scooters.
I'm brain fart.
So let me the way I'll answer that is, so we have a very high utilization rate as we compare scooters to, say, bike share, right? And it varies city by city, and that you know, that's where regulation kind of comes, because in some markets we are capped, like in D.C., you're only allowed to have 600, which is not an adequate number to service all 8 wards of DC at a city that size. You know, that's an example where, you know, there are cities where, you know, you have the San Diegos, which are very open to, you know, the growth potential of a company, and the company should have more autonomy to grow the number of scooters based on their business model. And, you know, frankly, like, we don't just, I mean, that was the big knock on the dockless bike company, which is why we've seen the numbers plummet in that NACSCO report as well around dockless bikes, because they were just dumping just tons of bikes onto cities versus saying, let's start with a number that we think works best, and then we want to make sure the demand is there, and then we keep growing, right? So it's that kind of, you know, that continued growth versus like, let's just have 10,000 scooters if we don't know that's a proven number?
Yep.
Like, we can always get there. So it all depends. Like, city by city, it depends. Like, there's no one answer to that, because every city is different. In some cities, you know, we might be allowed a couple thousand scooters. In some markets, we might be only allowed 100. And so the vehicles, you know, the life of that vehicle will change based on the utilization rates. So that's kind of what depends. And that's why, you know, as we continue to design our new vehicles, we have that in mind, is what should the shelf life, or, you know, the continued growth of the vehicles be over time. And that's like one of the things that design capability, that thought process is always very important to improving our scooters. So that way the life of each individual scooter based on those utilization rates remains as long as possible. So I think that's where you kind of see, you know, it changes market by market.
How often, like how many, like is shrinkage a problem? Like I feel like the old man in me is like, oh, I bet some young kid's going to steal it. And then immediately I'm like, nah, there's an Aptide doing it. It's pretty,
you know,
pretty tough
pretty
to do.
Old man voice,
well, thank you. I work on it. But like, it's not a thing, right? I mean, it's got to be difficult for, I mean, it's tracked, it's GP, like it's got to be nearly right. Impossible.
Yeah, it's very difficult. Obviously, theft is something that we keep in mind when we develop our technology, making sure that everything is tracked, that people don't have those capabilities to steal the scooters. Obviously, it's very difficult unless you're very creative and thinking how do I hack into the technology. But it's difficult because it's going to run out of battery as well.
Yeah.
So that's going to happen eventually. So you may pick it up and throw it in your car and go somewhere, but eventually it's going to run out of battery. So, you know, it's not so easy. I mean, it's obviously something that we are very cognizant of, something that we think about as we develop our technology. How do we make it as safe as possible for people and against theft?
Very cool. Thank you so much for taking all this time to talk to us.
Oh, my pleasure.
When are we going to see some birds here in Chicago? When do I get to take a ride to my office?
Hopefully soon. I know the city's working on it. We obviously want to have this, you know, the tech community support and making sure the business community support, making sure that they get they have the ability to get on the road as soon as possible. The city is working pretty hard. They released their mobility task force report. So they're pushing. And so, we're excited. Hopefully soon.
Sign me up as your first tech bro influencer. I will Instagram every trip. All I want is to make sure that you set the birds outside of, and you write this down, the bridge, the LaSalle Street Bridge, LaSalle and Wacker is where I need that puppy. That's
well,
my deal.
I honestly, that's what you should be tweeting about, that nonstop then or something.
Well, this podcast is going to go on next week, so I'll just be on it.
That there are birds in that area.
But I will.
I got to say, like,
I'm on it.
I got to say, as you know, former entrepreneur, Politico, and being at the nexus of innovation and government for quite a while now, I got to say, I have not seen as many companies as I've worked with, as many startups in healthcare and transportation and education, the excitement level around, you know, this company is something I've never seen before. And I think it's a testament to the impact that we can have. So, you know, we want people out there having fun, being safe, having a good time, and, enjoying all the perks, because, you know, this is a great company, and I've loved every minute of it, and I'm excited for what the future holds.
Awesome. Where do people go to download the app and check it out? Is it bird.co or what's the...
You can go to the App Store, download the Bird app onto your phone. Obviously, bird.co is the website. And there's a lot of information on the app, too. Some tutorials on everything on how to ride to... where to park to everything. So, and if you want to be a charger, you can go there as well. So that's the two places I would point people to.
Sweet. Brandon, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Of course.
It.
Absolutely. You can catch this episode of more at technori.com. Download the podcast on iTunes or Spotify. Stay connected. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Technori, or you can follow me at Katoon. Boom. That's a wrap.